Welcome back to the Craftery Podcast. We're on a special edition. So we released Christian's Corner a couple weeks back. We're still doing interviews and we're still having fun, but we are on to my segment. And before I tell you what it is, we are pushing these new small segments in hopes to bring more quality content to you. Just to fill the in-between weeks, in-between interviews, just a short half hour, 15 minutes to a half hour, depending on the topic and how much time we could squeeze out, just to bring out more information. This one we are calling, Spud Stories. The reason, the facts, the whys. So we have Christian's Corners. Christian is going to be bringing you his thoughts on business, tips, tricks, all those type of things. Spud Stories is for me not only to speak about the stories of crafts, but also speak about trying to learn my family history. I, for one, don't know a lot about my family. I never have. And it's something that I've been, you know, kind of wanting to do here and there. Now that I have children, I kind of want to be able to tell them where they come from and who they are and who maybe some of their ancestors were. Or if they just get curious, I want to be able to answer those questions, not only for them, but for myself. I wanted to be able to answer those questions and just kind of get in touch with one's family lineage, family history, where I come from, and all that. So that's a lot of words to say. I'm going to be telling stories about crafts, just like the Craftery, but as opposed to interviewing a guest for each episode, I think I'm going to start by spotlighting a few crafts here and there, and then reading from a book that I pleasantly found. So I'll start off with a little story. And I think I dropped it on one of the episodes, but if not, we're going to start with the story. And then today we're going to talk about being a bowyer, or a person that makes bows, and a fletcher, a person that makes arrows. The reason I wanted to start with this one, not only has it had an impact on my life because it's something I really enjoy, but also it's probably one of the oldest professions way back. But yeah, so we're gonna start with a little story, and then we'll jump into that, and then I'll have another little story at the end. We're going to do some radio teases to hopefully keep you going. Hopefully the audio sounds good. Hopefully you like all the new, you know, entrance music. The exit music will all stay the same. And yeah, so story time. Story with Spuds. Where do we start? I am 31 years old. Currently, will be 32 here as the podcast turns 1 year old. Like I said in the beginning, I don't really know my family. I do have some immediate family members that are still alive, but they, like many other families, I would assume, kind of lost themselves in the, you know, family, the family unit kind of disappearing from, you know, the 40s and 50s into the 60s and 70s, where people kind of spread out. Maybe kids and parents had some off things. They don't really live in a family compound anymore. Suffice to say, I did a lot of studying. I wanted to know who I was. I wanted to know, after so many years of not knowing where I came from, where I belong. And to find that, I think maybe 4 or 5 years ago, I took a 23andMe. I spit in the cup. You know, maybe you don't want to do that. That's fine. I chose to do it. I got it as a gift for Christmas 1 year, which was amazing. And I ended up pulling off. And at first, I was satisfied with my quote unquote heritage. Like, what percentage of this am I? What percentage of that am I? And it was not shocking based off of my build. I know you guys can't see me and you just get to hear my beautiful voice for radio. But you know, I'm your, how do I put this lightly? Just an atypical dude, red beard, red hair, on the medium side, like 5'10", 5'11" with some shoes on, kind of built like a leprechaun. I'm not going to lie to you. So it was always assumed that there was some Scottish, some Irish, and some German in there. That's what I remember being told by my grandmother. And that turns out to be true, like many other fun stories that turned out to be true that weren't all just stories. But while I'm coming up to that, about 3 years after, the curiosity began to come back. It's like, okay, now I know what we are, but who are we? Was the next burning question that I had. I know who my grandfather is. I know, on my father's side, I know my dad, I know my mom kind of, but I don't talk to them. Who am I? Who are we? Where do we come from? What did we do? Maybe that's me, being a little bit more curious, about the situation. So there I am again. Ancestry.com. I've already spit in the cup. They already have all my DNA. I wonder, how far back can I search this thing? How far back can I go in the time machine to maybe get a glimpse of recorded documents of potentially who I'm related to and what they were doing for their livings? So I'm going. I'm making some good progress. Like many things in my life, it comes in spurts, but I'm always persistent and consistent, and will make time for the things I want to make time for. Obviously, there's always time somewhere. You just got to figure out what you're giving up. Mine, I like to give up a couple hours of sleep to have a couple hours of me time for what I want to do. But that's a tangent. So there we are, 3 years later with the itch, back on Ancestry.com. I spit in the cup. They already have my DNA. So we're trying to find who I'm related to. Find my father and my mother, easy. Find my grandparents, at least, yeah, pretty easy. And then I never knew, I would assume like many people, great-grandparents, never really, they all passed away either before I was born or when I was very young. So I just remember asking about them a couple times, not really getting a lot of information. So luckily, you know, in the 50s, the 40s and 50s, they were really taking care of documents and the census and all those things are a huge help in finding your relatives. So I found my great grandparents. Awesome. And then as I got to my fourth great grandparents and beyond, specifically on my namesake, Asbill, I found a book that was written by, and I'm going to pull this up so I don't get it wrong, because I want to thank them, even though they have passed away. George T. Bennett and Donald B. Bennett. They are genealogists out of Pulaski, Tennessee. This book that I found is the Asbill Family History Book, and it has Asbill spelled out 9 different ways on the cover. I doubt it's a book that was in production, but it is in a museum. I found it on the Internet Archive, thanks to Ancestry.com. And reading through it, I was skeptical at first. I was like, man, there's not a lot of documentations backing this up. This is just words on a page. It all sounds kind of like grandeur or theatrical. It's written very well. It's very matter of fact. It's trying to put in as the least amount of words on a person's life. I'm going to read the dedication for this book written by George T. Bennett. Many years ago, it was a dream of many Asbill descendants to persevere the records of a noble family. Many family histories were started but never finished. Many records were written in family Bibles but lost to many family legends were told and forgotten. It remained for a young, energetic Asbill descendant to spend a short life in accomplishing, with the help of God, this almost impossible task. To Donald Bennett, my son, who was born on March 31st, 1934, and who departed this life on September 8th, 1954, because of this untimely death from cancer, I wish to dedicate this book to you. So that was a man, George T. Bennett, taking this book for his son, much like my drive to find out who I'm from. He wanted to find out who his ancestors were. The last name Bennett is married in family type of thing, you know. The compiling of a family history, even from an enormous amount of authentic data, is very much like following a will-o'-the-wisp. The authors have followed up leads from many contributors in North Carolina, Kentucky, Tennessee, Georgia, South Carolina, Missouri, Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, California, and the National Archives at Washington, D.C. And it goes on to list just a lot of the Asbill families that have helped out or gave letters, or maybe they had copies of census documents, or what their fathers or family members have done. So I thought that was cool. And then I'll just start with the first page of this book that I found really interesting and how it relates to our topic of the day. I know I'm kind of rambling here. I just figured as we go, we will touch on the book and touch on the crafts. But as far as we go back on paper, there's nothing much beyond 1562. So we can trace it all the way back to 1562, which is cool. In the southwest corner of Devonshire, England, in Ashburton, it is the original home of a gentleman named John Ashbald. And the Ashbalds were a group of people that lived in the hills of the area, or at the time in Old English, the Balds, the hilly areas, were full of just beautiful ash trees. So the people that took care of the trees and took care of the land was the Ashbalds, and the town was Ashburton, the town among the ashes. It was surrounded by ash trees. And if anybody wants to read the book for whatever reason, I will gladly forward you my link to it. And you can kind of get after it. But why I chose bow and arrows, or bowyers and fletchers, as craftsmen, one, to highlight how pivotal they are in the world up until gunpowder and firearms, and then up until today where people are still making them. I can remember as a young boy, maybe 5 or 6, going out and visiting my grandfather for one of the few times that I did. And whenever I went to go see my grandfather, it would always be at an archery range, and we would just go shoot. I had this like brick barn red, probably fiberglass kid's bow that I would that he would let me shoot at the range. But eventually he gave it to me and told me I could take it home and practice with it after I showed enough determination. But my grandfather, Donald, was the one to teach me what hand to use, how to use the bow. And we just, you know, sat up in a little range that had deer targets and paper, you know, hay targets and paper targets and all just different kind of stuff set up. And that was just one of the nice memories. I remember there was an iron, old school riveted iron green bridge that was eventually torn down that led to his pawn shop that he was the manager for. And you know, he just worked with a buddy of his, and he eventually gave me that bow, and that really stuck out. But also, my grandfather himself made at least there's at least two surviving bows in the family, but he made I don't know how many bows and arrows and did all his own leather work, and that's one of the few things that I remember about the man. He was the man of not a lot of words, but his craftsmanship really, really rang true. And as I continue my journey on the making path and just coming to terms with who I am and what I want to eventually do, I think about those memories fondly, and how much a simple bow and arrow may at the time just be something to do, something to go out and calm my mind when I have a lot of things going on, because I still shoot recreationally as a way to get away from the world, you know what I mean. I'm always brought back to those young trips of going to the shooting range or going out into the woods and shooting the bow and just remembering all those things. And then I go into my deep dive about the genealogy. I go in the deep dive about, you know, like it's a surface dive of being a bowyer and a Fletcher. I think on the next episode, I will dive a little bit deeper into some more history about it and how they actually do it. And I'll do a two-part series where I'll do a story like this, and then on the next one will be more factual and data-driven, if you will, and kind of give you the ins and out or the general synopsis of how they made bows and the processes. There's a lot of YouTube videos and stuff out there that I would recommend, and especially historical ones. But yeah, this is a good spot. That's my personal story. I think on the next few, I will try to follow the same cadence of bringing in the craft, a little history of about the craft, and then how it relates to me. Or I don't really necessarily need it to be about me, but how it relates to what we're doing here at the Craftery of trying to find makers of all different disciplines and interviewing them and learning more about the why and how, I suppose. But yeah, thank you for listening to this small, shorter episode, the first episode of Spud Stories. Let us know, give us some feedback on what you guys think of these new every other week small segments to keep the content going for you guys in between our normal maker interviews. If you like them, send them feedback. If you don't, and you think we should just stick with the interviews, send us that too. We can only grow with your guys' support and your help. If you like what we're doing here at the Craftery Podcast, don't forget to rate and review us wherever you listen to your podcast. And sharing with a friend is really one of the best ways we can grow. You know, like Germany, they went from one guy to at least 20. I don't know if their friends are just sharing friends, and they're relatively, you know, newer to the listenership, and it's always the same place consistently. So they're moving and grooving. We're making moves. So let's everybody else get on the same page. I appreciate you all. I hope you have a great night, great day. Whenever you listen to this, pardon the noise in the background. Remember, if you're positive, positive things can happen. And if you're not positive, they won't. But also, if you're not positive, my number's down in the description. You just gotta follow my, look in my page and you'll see it. Just give it a jingle. I'll answer it and we'll talk it out. I want to make sure everybody's on the up and up. Make sure your craft is going well, and remember to push yourself to be something. Thank you.